households for this program. We also receive referrals from in-home supportive services providers, adult protective services, social service agencies, senior centers, and hospitals. I would respectfully ask you to reconsider our $48,750 request to help the elderly and disabled residents of the city of Paso Robles who are in need of minor home repair so that they can maintain independent living safely in their homes as long as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Maren. And we have no other representatives. Is this on this item, Rob?
You know, I wasn't going to be here to talk about this item, but I'd like to.
Yeah, if you like, yeah. Yeah, be honest with who you are there.
Hi, my name is Rob Beneso. I am the president for the California Mid-State Fair 16 DAA. I wasn't coming here to talk about this, but I like the project at 24th Street because we've had some discussions with the city to do some improvements on that for ADA and for accessibility for fair time and for our, you know, annual programs that we have, which, you know, is every weekend, every week. There's a lot of people to go across that crosswalk. And we were, you know, had some discussions, and I don't know where they went with Colleen and public staff, and I mean, to improve a ramp to go in and have another entrance other than the what we call the shell gate. So any way that program to get that improvement down there is going to be very for handicap accessibility and anything like that. And if there's anything that we can incorporate any other of the projects that we thought in that area to improve that, we're willing to discuss that with the city also.
Councilman Belish, question.
Let me put you on the spot. You guys got any funds to contribute to that?
We have some funds for a project that we wanted to do to have another entrance there. I don't know the exact amount with that. Yeah. There were donations from the community to do some improvements there. So I know there was some utility issues and whatnot that were there that about, you know, making a ramp because of the steepness and whatnot there. So, I mean, absolutely dialogue can be had if it makes sense for both, you know, the city and for
sure.
The event center. We're willing to have those discussions.
And I'm just spitballing here. I can't speak for everybody here, so cut me off, Sean, if you think so. But we have a limited amount of funds that we need to split the baby here. But I'd like to do both. Capsule does a really good job, and those are poor people that need the money as well. But if she's asking for $48,000, $49,000, we do the balance towards, we have some admin costs that have to be reserved. Do you know about the engineering costs that Rob's talking about? And is that included in that $168,000?
Well, I think we need to remember this isn't specifically for the fairgrounds.
I get it.
This is a crosswalk to get to the other sidewalk in the public right of way.
But it would get them to.
And for a CDBG project taking on funds from another
entity. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, this is a specific project that we've got for some specific funds. It doesn't mean that if you decide to do both projects that we couldn't work within a smaller amount, get less, or come back and ask for more next year.
Good point.
As far as trying to partner in and get funds from two different for the same project, I think it's complicated with a CDBG federal fund grant.
Thank you.
Good.
All right.
Thank you, Rob. Anyone else public-wise like to address this item? Okay, we'll bring it back to council for a discussion. My first
Mayor
question.
Hammond.
Question.
We do have Wendy Lewis from Echo.
Okay, someone online?
Yes.
Hello, go ahead. Do we have him still, Melissa? Or?
She's still here. I'm just having problems putting her into the live room. I don't know why. There we go.
Wendy, can you hear us?
It looks like she hung up. She, the call dropped, she hung up.
Okay, she dropped off?
If she calls back, I can let you know.
Yeah, well, let me know if you get her back. So let's bring it back to council for direction and discussion here. This is just the first entry point into CDBG funds, and we're going to give you direction of what to do. I'll open up then discussion now. This is kind of where we talk about things. Pro Tem Gregory, if you'd like to start, go ahead.
I'd like to make this in two parts, so it's a little easier maybe. But on the public facilities, I'm in favor of doing the 24th Street crosswalk project because it's very needed. But I think we ought to, I don't know if we can do this in a motion, but make a motion that if there's a way to work with the Fair Board to do accoutrements or improvements to what you're already doing, I think we should encourage staff to do that after this is finaled. So.
I have some questions. Darren, if we were to do this at 24th Street, would this project be 1 year, 2 years out? What's the timing on something like this?
There's some timing out there. It's we have a list of projects working with Public Works. Detis and Public Works did a lot of work on Riverside and 18th Street with CDBG, and that was multiple years of program funds where we worked on things. Last year's crosswalk is still something that we haven't got to a point where we're looking for contractors, got engineering design, so it could take some time before this project got to construction.
And I know we're getting ready to get into the 24th Street overcross over the railroad. And I think, Chris, you were telling me about originally the vision was to also extend that rework down toward the highway from that project. Can you explain what might be possible?
Yeah, Mayor, and thank you for the opportunity to provide some clarification. So staff has been working with the fairgrounds on some different concepts to improve pedestrian connectivity in that area, along with some of the work that they want to do. I am not the engineer in the room, but I can tell you that in a lot of those discussions, as was stated, some of the sloping, there's some quasi, it's not a retaining wall necessarily, but there's a slope and a wall there. It's going to require some significant engineering to kind of create a contiguous pedestrian path on that side of 24th Street. So we have been and will continue to work with the fairgrounds to try to identify a solution. I think it's not going to be like a hundreds of thousands of dollars solution. It's going to be more than that. And so it's going to take, you know, I think some additional planning and some thought to try to figure out how that whole corridor could be improved, because we just made pedestrian improvements at the corner of 24th and Riverside. We just got notice that we're going to get about $17 million for the bridge to improve the bridge with pedestrian improvements over the railroad track there. So this corridor is in line for some additional review that's needed. So one of the things that we've talked about internally, and just to give you maybe a very sneak peek of, where we're going to potentially bring some stuff to you for next budget cycle, is we really need to probably look at a corridor study for this area to really plan out how all that work can get done. So I'm telling you that because there's a lot of planning and additional work that needs to happen because of the unique factors in that area.
So the reason my question is, you know, if we do the 24th Street pedestrian crossing, is it money wasted? In other words, I don't want to put any money there if we're going to tear it up in a few years down the road.
I personally don't see that. I think there's a lot of independent utility with that crosswalk, regardless of some broader pedestrian improvements or corridor study. So I don't see that. And typically those corridor improvements are going to come in phases over many years. So I think there's a lot of independent utility with this crosswalk
right
today. That's why staff's bringing it forward.
Yeah, the safety is number one in the city. So, I mean, I see that. I just wasn't sure how this 24th Street railroad crossing is going to affect this corridor sooner or later, or how that's going to fit. So, Councilman Bell.
I like Councilman Gregory's suggestion. I'd like to second with kind of a caveat. I don't know if I want to dedicate all of that 168 yet.
I have a modification you might like.
Let me share my first, and then we can work on it. I think there's some planning that needs to go on. I think we can all agree with that. I think there's some collaboration that needs to go on. And I think if I understand Darren correctly, I think we can dedicate some of these funds to an ongoing project. I want to support CAPSLO. I'd like to maybe take the $48,750 that they can use this year and dedicate the rest of it towards the crosswalk project, because it sounds like we'll need to, if to the extent possible, towards a crosswalk. And Darren, you're going to have to come back with us and tell us if that's possible. And if that's not possible, what do we do with those funds? So hopefully it is possible.
So just to work off your idea. So Darren, if we were to give the $48,000 in CAPSLO and the remainder to the crosswalk and direct staff to get all the engineering done, get it shovel ready, get a good bid on it, and then we could use
cooperate.
CDB and cooperate, of course. And then we could use CBD funds from next year to fill it up.
So I think what we would do is take your direction and work on it and come back to the March meeting with some alternatives. What we'll need to do is dropping that 168 down to 120. And see what we have the ability to do with that. What I don't know is having a partial project for CDBG. What I do think we can do is maybe see what we can work with the smaller amount and come back to you in March with that final action plan.
Yeah, I think it's important to go ahead on that crosswalk too. But
it's going to take more. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it's going to take more than a year. So,
Councilman Strong.
And see, the other thing.
That was a second.
Some of this makes a lot of sense, but I'd like to suggest one other thing that hasn't been mentioned, and that is CAPSLO has an outstanding service, and we're evidently the only ones funding it. And I think we can somehow encourage or publicize this to try to get some citizen donations or organization donations to CAPSLO from other organizations that are interested in the same thing they are. And we've got plenty of businesses in town that have a good interest in helping these people survive and not clutter up their part of the street.
So for the record, Fred, Habitat for Humanity has the same program in place. And they help people. I don't know if CAPSLO knows that or not, but I don't think there's enough help. So that's why I'm willing to support CAPSLO on this.
Oh, no, I'm not saying don't support them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that this is another alternative for them to get enough money to make the project work.
I'm going to make a motion. Or is it? You take a motion?
I do.
Not yet. We're just not finished.
Mayor Hammond.
Discussion-wise.
Okay. Wendy Lewis is back on the line if you'd like to hear her public comment.
Let's see. I was going to have Marion come up too again, but let's go ahead. Wendy, can you hear us? Go ahead.
Hi, Mayor Hammond. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for this opportunity to Mayor Hammond and all the council. I apologize. I'm not in there in person. I'm just coming out of an ECHO board meeting. It just had a conflict tonight with so many priorities happening. But I want to share my appreciation and our board's appreciation and the entire team at ECHO for the years of support from the City of Paso Robles through the CDBG funds. They are critically needed in order to provide the comprehensive services that this community of Paso Robles receives who are facing homelessness. So far this year, ECHO has supported 361 individuals and children into permanent housing. That is made possible through donations like this and support like this and the comprehensive services that ECHO provides. That includes comprehensive case management and all of the different services that make forward progress possible for the individuals we serve, the families with children, the seniors. And we're just grateful for the support we receive from the City of Paso Robles and grateful for tonight's recommendation. just alone in the city of Paso Robles, out of that 361 number, 162 individuals and children are housed because of partnerships like the one we have and the services ECHO provides at a national level. If you see 10% of the people you're serving in your programs go back into permanent housing, that's what we see on the national level. ECHO, year after year, sees about 60% of the people that are in our 90-day program successfully have a path into housing. And because we've worked with them to give them the tools to support them not only into housing, but have set them up for success, because they are doing the work with our support, 90% stay housed. So it's not a recidivism rate of recycling back into being on the streets, being back into housing. It's truly a pathway to stability and a better life, which yields a better life for our entire community. Again, I want to thank the City of Paso Robles for the ongoing support, and I'm here if we have any questions to offer, and I apologize again for not being there in person.
Thank you, Wendy. Questions of Wendy real quick before we let her go? Okay, I think we're good, Wendy. Thank you.
Thank you. I've been here on standby just in case.
Yeah, I think we're fine. Councilman Bausch, you had something to add?
I had a question for Darren. On the summary of the applications, there's an asterisk. It says it assumes the 18,185 is used for category C.
That's for the administration.
Right. How does that impact what we just talked about, the 168 and the 48?
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. However, if you decided you wanted to take administration funds and put it into that mix,
right,
it's possible you could do that, but then you would be taken away from paying time, staff time to administer.
The lion's share goes to the county, though, of that admin.
The 18,000 is what the city would get.
Right, right.
Should we?
But it is possible that 18,000 could be put up and go towards a crosswalk, you know.
Okay.
I have a question of Angelica or maybe Ryan, but are we still funding ECHO with our biannual? It was like every 2 years. We're still doing that, correct?
Thank you.
That amount. Why don't we get that on the record?
During the last budget cycle, council did approve funding for ECHO for 2 years. That's $444,000 over the two fiscal years.
2 years, yeah. That's what I thought. We're still doing that.
Right. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That's what I needed. Marion, Marin, can you come up? I wanted to ask you specifically, you know, of the two items, this is the first time I think I've seen Capital ask for two different items in the, you know, public facilities and also for the services. Is there one that's more important to Capslo than the other? I mean, is just if we're looking at them, but what's more important at this point?
Right, that's a good question and difficult to answer. I think the Adult Day Center, you have been so gracious to provide funding for us over the last couple of years. I think this is the first time that Minor Home Repairs is reaching out to you because of the need, the growing need in North County for our elderly and just low-income citizens. It could be also disabled children that are in need of home repairs, minor home repairs, helping them to stay in their homes. And if, you know, some of them are not able to, you know, this could mean that they become homeless if they're not able to stay in their home safely. So it is a great need. It's growing. And I know our clients at our center, our seniors, benefit from this assistance from Minor Home Repairs as well. It's a great support to keep them in their homes. So
my last question is, are those dollars quantified and spent for Paso Robles, or are they for the whole county?
No, it would just be used for Paso Robles, right. The city of Paso Robles.
Very good. All right. Go ahead.
Both requests?
services and facilities?
So there are two different, well, one would be for the adult day center would be separate to keep our, those with dementia and Alzheimer's.
That's Paso Robles facility also.
Right, we're on 1345 Oak Street. We've been there for, since 2013. And then we would, the separate ask is for the minor home repair services.
I think to speak to the home repairs, I'm seeing in my practice so many people that are literally stuck in their homes. They can't move for property tax reasons, affordability reasons. They can't downsize. They can't repair. They can't afford a mortgage and interest rate. I see that need. I'm really torn. It's hard to say that there's one or the other. I see your point.
I was just curious. No, I wasn't suggesting that we do one or the other. I'm just was wondering though, in as far as Capslow's plan, is one more important physically to do to the recipients of your services, or because I've never seen the facilities come up before, and that's why I was curious if this is something new or something you're asking other cities to,
Well, for the past 20 years, the county of San Luis Obispo has been helping with funding. So some of the projects we've seen, they were able to assist folks in San Miguel and in the rural areas of Paso. However, we're seeing more and more need in this area. And so there's, that's why for the ask this time.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Mayor, just a clarification. The adult daycare center is the only one in the county.
Correct, yes.
So you're, luckily it's here, so a lot of the people are more local can use it, but it is the only one in the county. And I think, for the record, we've probably supported that for the last 8 years.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, and about 70% of our participants are from North County.
Yep.
And we're also serving veterans as well. So it's providing a great need, not only for the person with dementia and Alzheimer's, but for their families, to enable them to continue working and take care of other family members.
Yeah, Capslow does a great job for us. We really appreciate it. All right, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
All right, back to us then.
I'd like to come back to the crosswalk again, and thank you for Capslow. Yeah, we appreciate all the work you do. So I just, I think we need a sidewalk there. I think it's important. I just want to be clear that it's a fit for this program and also a fit for what it is that we're wanting to accomplish. So if it really is an issue of like safety with our unhoused people, crossing the road, I'm not sure actually if a blinking sidewalk with an island in the middle, if people are going to kind of come up that far up the block to cross to get over to the Black Oak neighborhood. I mean, realistically, if that's the problem that we're trying to solve and the issue that we're trying to allow ourselves to fit into this kind of program, I think that, deserves some attention.
So what we see right here is, I think Warren's brought this up. This is our amount requested, amount recommended, but now currently by council on what we've been discussing. So that final numbers fit what we're trying to do, correct?
Correct. Those numbers are what we're looking for. It's just a matter of how you want to distribute them through the application.
Yeah, max available. We're meeting those, and that's the distribution that we're proposing staff to take back and work with. So is there any further discussion on this, or do you want to change any of those numbers? Then I'd like to go ahead and make a motion or have a motion.
Okay.
Broker to agree?
Unless you want to make it, Chris.
No, go ahead.
All right, so Councilman Beale makes a good point. I'm gonna go back to my original and support the $168,000 to the crosswalk because of the safety issues there and needing to be done. And then I like the way they've split up the funding for the homeless shelter and the senior day program. So I make a motion that, there you go.
Mm.
There, perfect. That is like real time.
Want to make a motion on?
Yes.
Okay, so do we have a second on this? Okay, all right, that's what I thought. So I...
Make an alternative motion?
Yeah, yes, let's go ahead, Chris, go ahead.
Revert back to the previous numbers. Thank you. So moved.
All right, well...
Just for the reference, for the sitting in, there's the motion would be $120,108 for the...
Thank you. Just for the record, so that anybody listening in knows, it's the motion's $120,108 for the 24th Street Crosswalk Project, and then $48,750 for the home repair project. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes, that is correct, with the caveat that to direct staff to work with the event center.
I would caution putting that into this.
Or, I'm sorry, you're right.
Because we said to work with the rules within the CDBG. So
you want to direct it towards next year? How did we say that?
Well, the event center is not a CDBG eligible.
I apologize. I withdraw that. We said something about working for next year.
So what we're going to do is we can take these numbers. We're going to bring them back to you in March. Yeah, if for some reason we can't work, there's an issue with the amount for the crosswalk after working with the engineers, then we'll come back to you in March and maybe have a different alternative, or we can reestablish it. Even in March, you could change back and go,
exactly,
hey, we really need 168 for the crosswalk, and here's why.
Okay.
That's the information we'll be able to bring back to you.
This is...
But we understand if this is the way the motion goes, the way council is directing staff to come back with that final action.
Initial direction from us to you at this point in time.
Thank you.
Chris?
And then I'll just clarify that although we're looking for a clean motion here related to CDBG, we have an upcoming workshop on goal setting, and then we have further opportunity to talk about additional priorities. So we hear you and be happy to have those conversations on what you want to see for the entire corridor here in the not too distant future.
Okay, we have a
thank you, Chris.
Motion second. By Bausch.
Second.
Okay, and second by Pro Tem Gregory. Any discussion? Okay, we'll go ahead and call the question on, Melissa.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, 5 minute break. Stand adjourned. Recess.
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
If ever there was a sure bet in thoroughbred horse racing, that bet was Citation, the horse that refused to lose. In his first year racing as a two-year-old, Citation took first place in 8 out of 9 starts.
Steady Citation, you can't break sideways.
By the time he stood at the starting gate of the Kentucky Derby in 1948, Citation was so dominant that the Derby didn't even allow bets for a place or for show. Only 5 other horses even dared to line up against him, including Citation's stablemate and only true challenger, Coal Town. And as CBS radio announcer Clem McCarthy called the race, Coal Town and Citation gave the fans a run to remember.
And they're turning for home. Coal Town and Citation head and head, and it looks like Eddie R. Carroll has got his Derby. They're coming in there just like they were the enemy, riding each other close. And it is Citation coming to the front. He's everything they said he was. He's going to win with his ears pricking. It is Citation by 2, pulling away. And the other horse, Coal Town, is hanging on gamely, but that's all he can do is hang on gamely to be second. Citation wins this Derby just as he pleases.
After winning the Derby, Citation went on to win the Preakness in a breeze.
Around the turn, Citation again goes to the front, and he is leading now by a length and a half. Falcon's Forge is second by four lengths. Govard is third by a length, and Better Self is fourth. Citation turns for home with Arcara looking over his shoulder. Govard coming through on the inside is second and making a challenge at Citation. Arcara takes no chances and shakes up Citation, reminds him he's got a whip with him, and Citation pulls on away. He is now four lengths in front, and it was not Govard who was coming strongest, but Vulcan Forge who rallied, and Vulcan Forge is coming on to the second. Citation the winner by five lengths. Vulcan Forge second by three, and Govard third by a neck with Better Self fourth.
Then it was on to the Belmont Stakes and a chance to complete the Triple Crown. But once Citation broke from the gate, it quickly became clear that his only real competition was with himself. Once more, Clem McCarthy called it to the finish.
And the others already are trailing so far that you're glad the distance is a mile and a half. And Escadrille is making his move on the outside, and he's got a horse to catch, a horse four lengths in front of him. But here comes the real test for Citation. They said they might not go a mile and a half. He's been a mile and a quarter. We'll find out now, because they got a quarter of a mile to come. And Citation is pulling away. He'll have to collapse to lose this race. It is Citation going to win the Belmont Stakes, the third angle of the Triple Crown.
Citation won the Belmont by 11 lengths and streaked to 16 straight victories over the course of 2 years. In his first 29 races, Citation was led to the winner's circle 27 times, one of the greatest thoroughbred racing records ever.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
It was the biggest overseas military operation in the biggest war in world history, and its best kept secrets as well. D-Day, a military term for the first day of a military operation, was a fitting description for the event, which turned the tide of battle in World War II. Plans by the United States and Britain to invade German-occupied Northern Europe had been in the works for nearly 2 years before the summer of 1944, when the supreme commander of those Allied forces, General Dwight Eisenhower, gave his assent to begin a massive landing at the French coastal town of Normandy. Those still awake in America and listening to their radios in the wee hours of June 6, 1944, were most likely listening to the harmonic band of Leo Diamond and his Harmonaires when suddenly, at 12:41 a.m. Eastern Time, the broadcast was interrupted with the first news of the invasion.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency Transocean said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun. I repeat, the German news agency, Transocean, said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun. There was no Allied confirmation.
Within hours, official confirmation of the invasion came in a broadcast transmitted from the Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force in London.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
When the news broke, the NBC radio network sounded their four-chime alert. The fourth chime was a note added to the familiar three-chime NBC musical signature. It was an emergency signal, sounded on the air to effect the immediate gathering of key NBC operating personnel responsible for broadcasting news.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the NBC newsroom in New York, where we are standing by to bring you the news of the reported operations against the continent by the Allies, which only the German radio has so far announced. The National Broadcasting Company intends to continue with its network service coast to coast throughout the rest of this night. This is our official notification to stations affiliated with NBC that we will continue broadcasting throughout the remainder of these nighttime hours. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
For the next 24 hours, network radio was on flash basis, ready for round-the-clock operation to broadcast uninterrupted news of the invasion, which Allied forces had termed Operation Overlord, but which would remain forever celebrated as simply D-Day. Despite heavy resistance by German troops, the landings were a tactical success, as Allied troops gained their first foothold in France since the beginning of the German occupation of that nation 4 years earlier. Less than 3 months later, on August 25, 1944, Allied troops liberated the French capital of Paris.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air, true stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell.
In the middle of 1943, U.S. B-17s and B-24s of the 9th Air Force were flying daily missions from bases in North Africa in support of Allied ground forces fighting in Italy. But military planners had another objective in mind that they hoped would cripple the Nazi war effort. Over 1,200 miles away lay important German oil refineries, which if destroyed or severely damaged, could seriously disrupt the enemy's fuel supplies and hinder its mobility. Ploiesti, Romania, August 1st, 1943. 178 B-24 Liberator bombers were assigned the mission, which was to be conducted at treetop levels after the long flight to the target. The dangers were clear.
Yes, thank you,
the
Mayor.
Costs could not be imagined.
Mayor, City Council, Ryan
Army Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel Addison E. Baker was leading his command, the 93rd Heavy Bombardment Group, on that fateful day. As he was approaching the target, his aircraft was hit by a large caliber anti-aircraft shell, seriously damaged and set on fire. Lieutenant Colonel Baker ignored the fact he was flying at that time over terrain suitable for safe landing. He refused to jeopardize
opportunity to revisit those assumptions and make changes where necessary. You actually are going to hear a lot from me in the next couple months. At the next City Council meeting, we're going to have an annual comprehensive report presentation. So that's actually our financial audited financial statements that will be presented. We're going to have the auditor actually come up and do a brief presentation. And then we also have some Olson South Chandler CFD bond issuances and annexations. So this is one of many presentations to be had in the next little bit. To keep on tonight's agenda, just keeping it really light and really just kind of talking about the general fund, kind of the general economic outlook, kind of talk a little bit about the supplemental sales tax, measures J20 and I-24, and what those or that tax revenue has been able to provide for us, status of capital projects, and some, I think we have four budget amendments to be had tonight. But to start out of the gate with the general fund overall, so attachment number five has this graph broken down into actually number form. So on the left-hand side, we have revenues. Total revenues are estimated to be $51.5 million. The next bar graph is now our updated projection, which is actually exactly 100% of what was anticipated. I think it was about a $25,000 total variance over a $50 million budget. So revenues are projecting to be, say, right on course what we had projected in June time. Expenditures, on the other hand, we had anticipated them totaling $56.6 million. Just similar to the previous years and trends, we're kind of trending to that 96-97% of appropriations. So again, very kind of right on spot on what we anticipated in June time. Taken together, this will have our ending reserve balance right around $16 million, which represents about 31% of revenues. The City Council goal is 30%. So taking a bigger dive into each one of these revenue sources, as you're aware, the city's three largest revenue sources is sales tax, property tax, and transient occupancy tax, also known as TOT. What this graph here shows is actual revenues received in sales tax, exclusive of the supplemental J20 or I-25. This is only the city's 1% base that it normally gets. And so as you can see, in 2012, we were just under $6 million. Going left to right, in 2019, we kind of peaked before the COVID-19 pandemic. Significant growth in 21 and 22, leading the pandemic. But since 22, we've really pretty much flatlined. Moving forward from 22 to 25. And this is kind of a recurring theme. We're going to see this definitely more in the TOT when I show you that chart. But overall, we're seeing these revenues really being stubborn and flattening and not seeing that growth that we saw coming out of the pandemic. The green bars, the 26 is obviously the current year we're in. That's the current projection. And then I did do a five-year forecast in June time, so that's what that represents. We are kind of anticipating kind of just of a slowdown, but then picking back up in year two or three. I do want to put a caveat on that, too. That was June decisions. And kind of looking at it now, there seems to be a little bit more storm clouds on the horizon. So I'm not as optimistic as I was once in June time. But should we get 3% growth, that's what we'll kind of look like over the horizon. Property taxes have actually been a very bright spot for the city. We're seeing significant growth there. So same chart, it goes back from 2012 at 10 million, and you get to see a pretty steady incline in the outer years. For 25, 26, we saw an assessed value increase of right around 5%. It exceeded the county's growth. This was primarily because of the hotels that were recently developed. So the Hotel Ava got their full improvements on the 25-26 tax roll, so that actually had a significant direct correlation to the city's property taxes. Moving forward with Olson South Chandler, we're kind of anticipating that 5% year-over-year growth from here on out. More likely, depending on the timing, it might be 7% 1 year and 3% next year, but I think on average, that's what we're going to kind of see coming out of that Olson development since it's coming online. So definitely positive news on the property tax storefront, on the front. But again, that transient occupancy tax and other, the third largest tax for the city, is even being more stubborn and flatlining as well. So similar, we had about a little less than $4 million in 2012. We've been bumping up against $10 million in annual revenue for the last 3 or 4 years. We can't seem to get over that $10 million marker. So actually, the receipts that were collected in 2022 were about 4,000 more than they were in 2025. So we're actually seeing a decline in revenue. I mean, not much of a decline, but still flattening nonetheless. That little line graph that I put in there was actually from an old forecast. If you recall, in January or February of 2020, I did a pretty in-depth 10-year forecast that was valid and accurate for about 3 months before the COVID-19 pandemic set. But interestingly enough, if you look in the outer years, the forecast had assumed where 26 is at. So it kind of seems that out of the pandemic, there was a big surge, and we're just kind of catching up to normalcy now. Changing gears on the expenditure side, there's nothing really exciting on this point, on this graph. So again, budget and projected actuals on the left-hand side on by department, by actual expense type, personnel operating on the right-hand side. And so for the most part, everybody's kind of right on mark, right around 96% of appropriations. There's only one little blip, and that's in the city manager's office, and that's primarily related to the settlement and release agreement that was approved last month with council and the Tribune article. So this action, or one of the amendments, is to true the city manager's budget so that it doesn't show it as deficit. So taking the revenues and expenses. So the bar on the left is revenues, the bar on the right is expenses for each of the fiscal years. The line is the reserve balance for the general fund. And if I, is it gonna work? There it is. Hey, look at that. So really, for the most part, in these early years, right, revenues were barely exceeding expenses. This is all about, this is essentially balanced budgets. Here we had a one-time allocation from other funds in 2016. Here we had a one-time allocation of expense to the 115 trust. But really what I want to highlight here is in 2026 is we're kind of in this whole very balancing out. And then when you get to these outer years, the separation gets a little bit thicker, wider. So we do have some work to do as far as reducing the general fund expenditures in order to meet revenues. It's not significant. You can see the line kind of just starts flattening. The reserve line starts flattening in the outer years. But we do need to keep that minimum reserve right around $16 to $17 million. So in the next two-year budget cycle, we'll have to definitely address that and pull on some levers in order to balance the budgets in the future. A couple other amendments that need to be had. The first one is the downtown parking program. If you recall back in 2019 when the program was first started, council approved up to $1 million interfund loan from the general fund to pay for startup costs for the parking program. In 2024, the program was eliminated, but we also had to issue refunds for people that paid for the revenue or the fines, and so it took a little bit of time to wind down operations. As of June 30th, the principal amount outstanding was $663,000. Previously, when the program was earning income, it was paying down the accrued interest first and then paying interest for any available cash. So obviously towards the end, it hasn't been able to produce in cash. So there's an accrued interest of about $16,500 for a total of right around $680,000. So the resolution tonight formally writes off the general fund loan between that and the parking fund. Because the parking fund was considered long term, I had already removed it from the calculation of reserves. And so by this action, it doesn't necessarily impact that prior slide of how much reserve the city has that was already taken out. Okay. The next adjustment has to do with our new office building for administrative services out at Second Wind Way. Previously, we used restricted police development impact fees to purchase a couple of the buildings. Now that the police substation is no longer going to be there, we need to change the color of money, and so we're going to swap it with general government impact fees, since that's the new house, home of Public Works and City Hall, or Admin Services. Moving on to our supplemental sales tax related expenditures on the police side, these are actual. So for the first quarter, 25-26, the police department has expended an additional $1.1 million than it would have otherwise been able to if it wasn't for J20. When it comes to police officers, we have 21 that are currently authorized. We have 10 that are on patrol today, two that are going to be graduating the academy in January. And then we have 7 slated currently in background to start the academy in January. So if the 7 are successful in getting through the academy, that would leave us with 2 vacant police officer positions. Outside of that, all the other positions have been filled except for the dispatch supervisor, and we're kind of just about waiting on that one too. There's likely another budget request coming in the next cycle to do 2 dispatch supervisors, 1 for each kind of the shift. Moving on to fire and emergency services, the biggest change more recently here is the implementation or the redeployment of the paramedic squad. The paramedic squad for the 24-hour shift is 3 firefighter paramedics and 3 engineer paramedics, and so that increased the full-time equivalents from 12 to 18. Those are mostly on board. I think there's only a couple that are vacant there. All the other positions are filled and going. And then you see here $1 million in fire expenditures so far this quarter in this fiscal year that we wouldn't have been able to expend if it wasn't for Measure J20. Here is the big list of all of the supplemental sales tax related capital projects. We still have a substation budget earmarked for PD at $2.3 million. The emergency services training tower adjacent to fire station number 3 is underway, expended $422,000 this fiscal year, so still much more to go. And then here a list of all the different road segments. that we have on the books. Sierra Bonita, our Sunset Panorama being the one that Dita's talked about earlier today, that one's active. Some of them on Elm Street, Capitol Hill, and Golden Hill, I think those projects are on the winding down, I think, so you kind of see the anticipated budget savings from those projects. And then the new I-24 related streets, Orchard Bungalow at $1.8 million, and the west side, east of Spring Streets, were the two kind of new road segments that were currently under design. So to date, we're about $3.4 million expended on roads for the first quarter. This is a very similar graph to the general fund, except this is only the supplemental sales tax one. It combines both the E-12 previously, then it combines J-20, and then now the new I-24. So that's why you see kind of the revenues jumping up there. But the whole purpose of this, what I wanted to show on this one is, even though we have a pretty large fund balance of $45 million, we have appropriations of $45 million too. So it really does, in on a budgeting standpoint, we're about 7.5 of dedicated reserves in the fund. We are looking at that and evaluating that for new roads, road segments, but we're also keeping an eye on the public safety standards of coverage and the results of that coming out of that study and any future funding that they might need there. With that said, the only other budget amendment we have is related to the Flamson pedestrian improvements. There was a $40,000 additional over and beyond the city's contingency that was incurred, mainly for the additional pavement work that was needed over by Lorena's, and we kind of expanded the scope than originally was anticipated. So $40,000 there. So the resolutions attached for those four budget amendments, plus the parking loan write-off. With that, Mr. Mayor, we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ryan. Questions first from council? Okay. I'll open up the public. Anyone wishing to come forward? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay. Bring it back to council. Looks like our action is to receive and file. Do we have any?
There's actually a resolution.
Yeah.
There's a solution, resolution? So I'd like to make a motion. We approve resolution 25XXX, amending the operating and capital budget appropriations as presented, and approve the interfund loan forgiveness between general fund and downtown parking fund.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion? Okay, we'll call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
No.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. We're on now to our two items that we pulled, three and four. Item three, Angelica, will you have that item for us?
Good evening. We do have some slides. All right, Angelica Fortin, Community Services Director. And tonight I'm here to talk about the property at 1910 Riverside Avenue, otherwise known as Pioneer Park, and the surplus land declaration that's being proposed. Uh-oh. There we go. So 1910 Riverside Avenue, APN number 008-254-003, is the area highlighted in blue on the slide. That property is 1.65 acres. It includes a skate park, restrooms, a picnic area, a partial parking lot, a maintenance shed and lot. The current condition, there's a significant turf damage on that property that does get converted into parking once a year for fairground use, which causes a considerable amount of damage that has to be restored every year. The asphalt requires repair and resealing. the skate park is spalling, and there are some fencing issues, and there is a restroom on the property that is also in need of replacement. Sorry, it's not clicking. The property is immediately adjacent to parcel APN 008-254-004 that was previously city-owned land, but it was sold to the fairgrounds, the Mid-State Fairgrounds, back in 2024, last year. It's 5.5 acres, and it's currently being leased back to the city until March of 2027. So currently, this entire property is being used as a public park. But after March of 2027, the ball field, the basketball court, and the play structure, which was actually removed in 2025 due to safety, and the partial parking lot highlighted in the blue will no longer be available. That will revert back to the current owner, which is the State Fairgrounds. In 2011, the Uptown Center specific plan was approved by City Council. There's a rendering there from that plan for the expansion of a Pioneer Park and the Pioneer Park History Center. The plan reads that they would plan and construct a new history center at the northeast corner of 19th Street and Riverside Avenue, providing new gallery space, visitor serving spaces, and support spaces to supplement the existing museum structure. So that expansion is actually into the property that we're discussing tonight. There were previous negotiations with the Pioneer Foundation back in 2019 and 2021. The intent at that time was to sell that property to the Pioneer Museum Foundation for expansion. The agreements were never finalized, which is why we're here tonight. As part of the plan to expand the museum, there was actually a plan to actually relocate the skate park as well. This was part, or was envisioned as part of the currently inactive Sherwood Park area master plan. And you can see up top in red, in the red rectangle there, where that was envisioned to be as part of that plan. And relocating the skate park to the Sherwood Park, I would say, is still one of the goals of the city, and something that we talked about back in, I believe it was May now, when we were talking about expansion or the fixing of the field at Sherwood Park. We talked about potentially a skate park at that point too. If we are to move forward with the Uptown plan and provide or sell this particular property, again circled in blue here, we did reach out to the Housing and Community Development, the California Department of Housing and Community Development, and they did confirm that the sale of the property is subject to the Surplus Land Act. The Surplus Land Act is a state law that governs how cities, counties, and other public agencies must handle government-owned land they no longer need. Before selling or leasing surplus public land, agencies must first offer it to certain priority groups, especially affordable housing developers, as well as schools, parks, and open space agencies. Agencies must follow specific procedures, timelines, and reporting rules. If any of those are skipped, they can face financial penalties, and their land deals may be invalidated. If the prospective buyer is the Pioneer Museum, they also confirm that there would be no exemptions that apply. The recommendation tonight is that the resolution be approved, declaring the property. I can read all of this if you'd like. Declaring pursuant to Government Code Section 54221 that the property is not exempt surplus land, approving the notice of availability, therefore authorizing the city manager to comply with the Surplus Land Act, and finding that such declaration is exempt from environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to sections 15060C and 15312 of the CEQA guidelines. Declaring the property surplus tonight does not mean that we're entering into any agreement. It just means that the property is available for anyone to provide notification to the city if they are interested in the property.
Okay.
Happy to take questions.
Okay. Thank you, Angelica. Again, Elizabeth, this is, again, the first step that the city must take if we